Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first episode of the Red Roses and Revolutions podcast, where I will talk politics, pop culture, patriarchy, and everything in between. So the first thing we're going to talk about today is former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder's endorsement of Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden. After spending months strengthening parts of his climate plan, creating a task force with Green New Deal backing progressives and Sanders supporters, and pandering to the environmental organizers about how he's finally listening to them, Joe Biden proceeds to advertise the endorsement of a man who poisoned an entire city in a state which he needs to win in order to become America's next top neoliberal. I don't know how anyone could look at this endorsement on a campaign and see this as a thing that you would want to draw more attention to, especially if you're trying to maintain the black vote in the city of Flint and other black communities in Michigan, but also trying to maintain the voting block of anyone who's politically left of hunting immigrants as a trophy sport. At the moment, Rick Snyder is still one of the most hated governors in the country, and the Biden campaign is sitting around like there couldn't possibly be a better endorsement. Because, you know, it's a way of them letting Republicans know that they don't have to face the consequences of their own actions. This is just one of those moments where you have to continue to question whether or not the Democratic Party, one, fully understands what they're doing, and also understands the voting block of people that they need to win. Because there's about 8% of Republicans who are willing to cross over and vote for a Democrat. A citrus Democrat, you know, specifically. While there are, you know, nearly 40% of the party who are progressives who will not vote for Joe Biden if he keeps moving further to the right. And I don't think the campaign fully understands that yet. And they're going to keep pushing to the right. And at some point, when they realize that they're making the wrong mistake, it's going to be extremely too late. And unfortunately, it's not our job as progressives to keep telling them what they need to do if they're not willing to listen. So next, we're going to move on and talk about House Speaker Nancy Pelosi demanding an apology from a salon in her own city, aka she's asking someone else to apologize for her own political mistake. First off, let me point out that this is the dumbest piece of news that I'm covering, because hundreds of thousands of lives dying due to coronavirus is way more important than what's happening in the story, because that's all that the news is seeming to cover, is this completely unimportant story. But with that out of the way, let me point out that this story itself just solidifies the fact that we have out-of-touch oligarchs in charge of our country. I mean, Democrats are the main ones pushing for the quarantine, not going out unnecessarily, and enforcing the use of masks, which I completely agree with. The only way that we are going to, you know, solve this issue is by containing the spread and not making unnecessary mistakes. And while I don't blame anyone for wanting to keep up how they look, you know, she attempted to ignore and bypass the very rules and standards which she's pushing for. And her not wearing a mask puts people, including herself, at risk. I mean, she's a public figure who should always be on guard. Unfortunately, in how society works, any mistake that you make can be politicized. So this whole story, you know, she tries to say that she was set up for this, you know, some type of entrapment. The thing is, this is less about entrapment and more about her being under scrutiny for her own poor actions in a specific situation. Now, was her mistake heavily politicized and meant to discredit the Democrats? Yes, of course it was. But she only has herself to blame here. She literally could have washed her hair at home like a normal human being, and this could have been avoided. Instead, she wanted to, you know, flaunt her privilege and her money and be able to do things that normal people aren't capable of doing. Now, is the media itself eating this up, especially the right wing? Of course it is. I mean, politically, they would be dumb not to take this piece of ammo to use against their opponent. However, the fact that this is even a story within itself is absolutely dumb. And it shows just how far journalism has fallen in our country in, you know, recent years, you know, compared to the days of Walter Cronkite to now. I mean, we are in a horrible spot, and I don't see it getting better anytime soon if we continue to follow, you know, one, neoliberalism and letting politicians like this get in office, but also if we keep letting the media control the narrative and manufacture consent without any type of pushback. Which is why I'm a firm proponent in, one, more progressives getting in office and primarying establishment characters, but also the left having their own media. Because if we're going to keep playing by the rules of Fox News and CNN, we're not going to get anywhere. So, time for the last topic of the day. We're going to talk about the police state, known as the United States of America, deciding to only kill minorities and leftists most of the time. I believe we all know about the situation that happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, with a 17-year-old domestic terrorist who crossed state lines to enforce an exploitative system that he has been indoctrinated into having complete faith in, with a weapon that was illegal for him to carry. Well, of course, he's alive and well, and he was taken into custody without probably a single worry that he would be turned into Swiss cheese by a fascist police state. And I believe we all know why he has no worries about that. And I believe that we also all know that the police in the United States have a reputation for shooting people of color at a statistically higher rate than white people. So let's move on to the fact that law enforcement agents killed Michael Forrest Ranahol while trying to arrest him in relation to a fatal shooting of a supporter of a far-right domestic terrorist group, because I have no issue calling them what they are. Of course, he was killed before he was taken into police custody. And that is not a surprise to any of us, as history has shown anyone who criticizes the United States government in any meaningful and substantive way mysteriously finds some way to stop breathing. And the worst part about it is that this story has become every news outlet's way of red baiting and drumming up support for fascism. Because anyone who's taking an English or math class knows double negatives assume a positive. So, you know, oh, we're pushing anti-fascism, you know, we're anti-Antifa. That's a really long-winded way of just saying that you're a fascist or a fascist enabler. And the way that the media is handling everything and that the way our government's acting towards things like this, they're just openly admitting that they want the government to, you know, boot crush everyone who isn't, you know, rich or white or in power. And the fact that we keep having to redo this entire situation over and over again is getting ridiculous, with the fact that there is no real meaningful pushback in the mainstream realm of dissent. There is no one on CNN pushing back saying, you know, that this was actually self-defense, or that, you know, the right-wing fascist group was actually a threat. No, of course, this is their way of pushing, oh, Antifa's bad, Antifa's organization. When I don't think that people in the mainstream also don't realize that Antifa is not an actual organization, and that its message of anti-fascism is inherently American. Well, inherently, you know, from the United States in the 40s when we were fighting Nazis. But of course, now that time has moved on, instead of fighting Nazis, we've become them. And anyone who pushes back against that, you know, slide to the right is a communist or some type of domestic terrorist. But they won't tie that title to their own people. And we need to really find some way to change that. And that brings the first episode of the Red Roses and Revolutions podcast to a close. I want to thank everyone for sitting through the very first episode of what I hope to be a long-running podcast. On the next show, we'll be covering more topics, you know, specifically about, you know, the pandemic's displaying the flaws of capitalism front and center, the need for protest music during times of turmoil, and we also have a special guest on the next episode. So again, thank you for everyone for listening. I greatly appreciate you allowing me to take up some of your time, and, you know, have a wonderful day, everyone.